Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Thari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Thari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Satya Shushimad. His Divine Grace Abhay Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Premse Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath. Shyama Kund Radha Kund Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Ganga Mayi Ki Jai. Jamuna Mayi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulasi Devi Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namne. Namaste Sarasakke Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyade Shitarine. So we'll do chapter 14, text 1 of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. No, we don't have the verse as yet. So this chapter 14 is entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature. And anyway, we're having trouble getting the verse up. But the chapter begins with one of Krishna's all-encompassing remarks or instructions to Arjuna, and in which he says that, again, he's going to impart the wisdom, the ultimate wisdom, to Arjuna, and a supreme wisdom, as he says. There we go. So we'll just do the back and forth reading of the verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Parang Bhuya Pravakshyami. Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam. Yajgyatva Munaya Sarve. Parang Siddhim Mito Gataha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained the supreme perfection. Purport. From the 7th chapter to the end of the 12th chapter, Sri Krishna in detail reveals the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the Lord Himself is further enlightening Arjuna. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. In the 13th chapter, it was clearly explained that by humbly developing knowledge, one may possibly be freed from material entanglement. It has also been explained that it is due to association with the modes of nature that the living entity is entangled in this material world. Now, in this chapter, the Supreme Personality explains what those modes of nature are, how they act, how they bind, and how they give liberation. The knowledge explained in this chapter is proclaimed by the Supreme Lord to be superior to the knowledge given so far in other chapters. By understanding this knowledge, various great sages attained perfection and transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord now explains the same knowledge in a better way. This knowledge is far, far superior to all other processes of knowledge thus far explained. And knowing this, many attain perfection. Thus, it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Krishna has explained in the beginning of chapter 7, which is mentioned in this purport, that now I am going to explain to you that knowledge knowing which there is nothing further to be known. That is quite an amazing claim by anyone. And it is only possible to be expounded this way by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, because who else can explain that he has the ultimate knowledge, the perfection of knowledge? There has been so many philosophers, Western, Eastern, from wherever, and they all have what's called a world view, their idea, like some philosophers claim that their philosophy is based on the idea that let us Let us give, let us live life in a way that is the best for all possible people. And one can see this is a very attractive idea, but how does one actually attain such a philosophy? How does one live that philosophy? And so Krishna, he has explained what is actually the worldview one should have, and we do it in as devotees. We understand that this worldview is called Shastra Chakshus. That is, Chakshu means eye, and Shastra means scriptures, seeing through the eye of the scriptures. So we see the world through this understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. That is the important point. And so in the second verse of this chapter, Krishna explains that by becoming fixed in that knowledge, one attains to, he says, mama sadharmyam. And he uses this word dharma. Mama means my, and sa with dharma, my dharma. With my dharma, you will understand. Because Arjuna's initial argument to Krishna to not fight in the war is based on what he termed Kula Dharma. Kula means the place, and Dharma means the place of Dharma, the Dharma of a particular place. So by this he means the traditions, the knowledge of the forefathers, things that are handed down by society to the next generation. So if you might consider that the Kula Dharma of the United States would be the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. These documents, these are the Kula Dharma of the United States. That is how they judge everything. And so they have a court system, they have a police system, and everything is done by this rule of law, is what they call it. That is their vision. It is not Shastra Chakshus, it is the invention, the idea of some philosophers in the 1700s that have been codified into this idea of how one should see the world and how one should treat others. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is the expressive measure of that Kula Dharma of the United States. It's not bad, but it is not the ultimate perfection. And so this is why we have to come to this idea. And in this verse, Sadharmyam Agataha, Krishna uses this term Agataha. Gataha means the way, the path. And so we see that in the mornings we chant Gurvastakam. And so Yasya Prasada Bhagavata, he says that without the mercy of the spiritual master, Nagati Kutopi, the same word, Gati, Nagati, there is no path without the mercy of the spiritual master, without the mercy of Krishna. And so it's very important we understand that this view of how we see what is the way forward. And so this chapter explains the modes of material nature. Now, the modes of material nature are very interesting, that it is a worldview of this material energy, shall we say. And so it is divided into three, the mode of goodness, mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. As devotees, we come very early to these understandings, to these conceptions of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And in this chapter, Krishna delineates the qualities of these modes and how one approaches them. And one of the things that Krishna mentions about this being established in this knowledge is that you do not become disturbed at the time of creation or dissolution or birth and death. But it doesn't mean that one loses one's identity. There is an idea, there is a Buddhist idea of nirvana, that we are in this vana, this forest of the material energy of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And if we can just somehow suppress our inclinations to be immersed in these modes of nature, that we become formless and we lose our identity into the cosmic whole. I think it was the late 1800s, there was an idea that they termed cosmic consciousness. One became merged into the cosmic consciousness. And in this way, one became free from suffering. And it is the and that also is the goal of the Upanishads. When we look at the Vedic literatures, there's a vast body called the Upanishads and their commentaries on the Upanishads. And the idea behind them is how to alleviate suffering, how to alleviate the causes of misery in this material world. And it's a very noble goal. And it is the ultimate goal, but we do not see it that through attaining this goal, one becomes identity-less or form-less or a consciousness-less. In fact, one takes up one's original transcendental consciousness, one's original position as a spirit soul, as a spiritual living entity, living in a spiritual atmosphere in the spiritual world. So Srila Prabhupada emphasizes this, and then he carries on to some descriptions of himself, and it's interesting the way that these descriptions that he gives, that I'm the seed-giving father, I'm the cause of everything, they link up to Prabhupada, to Krishna's words in the seventh chapter, in which he also says that he is the seed-giving, Bijang Mang Sarva Bhutanam, that I am the seed-giving father. And so here he repeats this just in order that we understand that his worldview is linked up. This idea of the three modes of material nature and the way the material energy works, the different elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, these things are all linked up into one consistent view of the world and how to approach it and how to live within it and how to, as he says in the second chapter, Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna, that one should transcend the three modes of material nature. So we get into this idea that, and Krishna explains, that he is the Brahman. Brahman was a concept of everything, that everything is Brahman. The atoms, the people, the animals, whatever we see, the stars, the universe, everything as a composite is embraced by the term of Brahman. And that nothing exists beyond Brahman. That and we have to, in a way, become attuned to Brahman in order to achieve perfection. This is one idea of Brahman. And so Krishna explains that he is the source of Brahman, but that comes later in the chapter. So if we just run through briefly the description of the three modes of material nature, how they operate in this world, what they do, and how people behave when they're under the three modes. Says the mode of goodness, it is illuminating, it frees one from sinful reaction, and it gives a sense of happiness and knowledge. So that is the mode of goodness. And the mode of passion comes out of unlimited desires and longings and binds one to material fruit of actions. And finally, ignorance. The darkness born of ignorance leads to delusion, madness, and sleep. And so Krishna repeats this a number of times, and he says that in goodness, the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. Now, the gates of the body, that's a very, in our idea, very sort of mysterious kind of, the gates of the body. We understand, what are the gates of the body? The gates of the body, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the genital, the anus, these are the gates of the body. How are they illuminated by knowledge? So we see that actually the processes of devotional service, they illuminate the body in that way. And the most important, of course, we understand is through the tongue, through the mouth, because we take prasadam, we chant Hare Krishna, we chant the holy names of the Lord, And in that way, our whole consciousness becomes illuminated. And we, through our eyes, we see the deity. Through our nose, we smell the incense and flowers offered to the deity. All these things are the illumination of our consciousness. And these are in the modes of goodness. And in passion, there is great attachment, fruit of activity, intense endeavor. That is the hallmark. When you see these people who are driven in the United States, especially because everything is revealed in the United States, you see how the great entrepreneurs or politicians, they're tremendously driven to achieve what they're going to achieve. And they have, and this is the uncontrollable desire and hankering. This is the hallmark of the mode of passion. And ignorance, one sees darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion. And the consequences of these modes come at the time of death. At the time of death, if one is in the mode of goodness, one attains to the higher planets. The planets, actually in here it describes not so much the heavenly planets, but the planets of the great sages. So we understand that there are planets like Brahmaloka, the Maharaloka, where all the great sages reside for the benefit of this universe. And they try to spread their knowledge and their consciousness throughout the universe. And people who are in the mode of goodness, they take birth in those planets. People in the mode of passion, they go to places of fruitive action. They're born on these kind of earthly planets where they're able to indulge their intense endeavor and desire for endeavor and desire and hankering. And in the mode of ignorance, one goes into the animal kingdom or the hellish planets, which are kind of indistinguishable. Animal life is, what is the keynote of animal life? And it is fear, a constant state of fear. If you ever look carefully at birds, we have a little bird feeder, and you look at those birds, they come up to the bird feeder, and every split second, practically, they're looking around to see, is someone coming to, you know, to threaten me? And that is their mode. That is how they live. And other animals, they live in holes and burrows and, you know, all the different kinds of animals, all in fear of get away from the different predators that exist in the animal kingdom. And this is the mode of darkness. So goodness results in pious action and purity. Passion results in misery. Palam dukam, Krishna says. Pala means fruits and dukam means miserable. So when we see the passionate endeavor and the intense endeavor of the people mentioned before, one sees that actually in the end, their life is one of failure. Because as the famous saying goes, you can't take it with you. Although you've strived so long during your life and hankered so much after these material things, and yet at the end, without your saying, without any kind of a recourse, you have to lose it all. So, and then in ignorance, tamasa pulam, the fruits of tamas, which are madness and illusion, and interesting, they use the word foolishness. People do foolish things in the mode of ignorance. Now, there's a very interesting verse in this chapter, in verse 20, where Krishna describes the seer, one who sees these elements at work, and one who understands that, and this is the most amazing thing, no other performer is at work than these three modes of material nature. Now, how does that operate? Where does free will exist if everything is happening according to the modes of material nature? So that is a great philosophical point and has been discussed from time immemorial, that what is the predestined, what is destiny, and what is free will, and how do they interact? What is, you know, how does that work? And it is this particular concept harks back to the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate, that the spirit soul, bewildered by the three modes of material nature, under the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by these modes of nature. So that is the illusion. So the free will exists where, let us say, give a very mundane example. You've had a hard day's work and you decide you want some entertainment. So should you go to the movies or should you just sit home and watch TV? I mean, what is the difference, right? That's the free will that you have in this material world. And the realization of that is simply that, as Prabhupada says about modern technology, for example, the dog is walking on four legs and the man is riding on four wheels and the man thinks he's very superior, you know. but this is the illusion of this material world, that everything is being carried out by the three modes. So sometimes I was very taken when one devotee, we were just discussing, and somehow another particular person came up in the conversation, and he said, "Oh, the unfriendly guy," you know, he's referring to this other devotee as an unfriendly person. And then he said, "Oh, you know, it's just the modes of material nature working, that's all. He's not really unfriendly, but he's just controlled by those modes when he interacts, when he has that those interactions with people." So I found that quite illuminating. So the person who knows that the Supreme Lord Krishna is transcendental to the three modes of material nature, Krishna says, he attains my spiritual nature, and when he transcends, he becomes free from birth, old age, and death, and enjoys nectar even in this life, amritam. That is the kind of happiness that comes from this knowledge, that it is amrit, it is deathless. It does not die, it does not fade, it is ever fresh. It is an understanding. It is, as I said earlier, it is a world view. And it is very important for us to embrace this world view. And so after Krishna has explained these three modes of material nature to Arjuna, Arjuna asks the question, how do you recognize the person who is transcendental to the three modes? By what symptoms is he known? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend? See, very important understanding. And then Krishna gives one of his lists again, as I explained. Krishna has these sections of the Bhagavad Gita that are lists. This one is four verses. And it's very interesting to look at these at this list. That first, one does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present. One does not hate these things when they are present or when they disappear. One is unwavering and undisturbed through all the reactions of the material qualities. One remains neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. He is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress. Who can say that they are undisturbed in happiness and distress? That's a tough call. You know? And this is the material, the mundane realization of this. He sees a lump of earth, a stone, and a lump of gold as the same. Very hard. He is equal in desire in the undesirable and the desirable. Steadily, he is situated equally in praise and blame, honor and dishonor. He treats alike both friends and enemies, and such a person is said to have transcended the modes of material nature. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that the keynote of this is that he can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal self, he does not attempt anything. And by such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated. So, and the final two verses of this chapter are two of the most quoted of Prabhupada, of the verses of the Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada quotes. The verse 26 is Mangcha yo vyabhicharene bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatitya itan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. That one who thus engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. And this, Prabhupada explains, is the answer to Arjuna's third question about how to transcend. And naturally, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes bhakti yoga. And particular word is avyabhicharena, without fail. So without fail, one engages in devotional service. And then to just kind of cap what Krishna is saying about Brahman and the three modes, he says, Brahmano hi pratishthaham, that I am the founder, I am the source of this Brahman. So pratishta, this is a word that we use for Srila Prabhupada as the founder of ISKCON, pratishta acharya. See, so he is the founding acharya. That was the term that he used. And so Krishna also, he uses this term pratishta to explain how he is the source of Brahman. So that is the nature of Brahman, which he says, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So this ultimate happiness, sukasya, sukha is happiness, and aikantikasya, ultimate happiness. And this, we understand that the nature of Brahman, satchit ananda, immortality, imperishability, and happiness. So, further, just to explain a little bit this knowledge, this transcendental knowledge, in the previous chapter, Krishna had quite a long list of the different sources of knowledge, of how to attain knowledge. And so he explains things like humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, shaucham, cleanliness, all these things, all these different things. There's a whole list, five verses of all these different things. And one of them is mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. Avyabhicharini. This is the same word for constant engagement in devotional service. So, and it's constant and unalloyed devotion to me. So, this unalloyed, this is a particularly interesting word that Srila Prabhupada uses very often, unalloyed. And there's a, I think it's from the Boston Harbor, where there was this foundry, and they were advertising as unalloyed metals, you know. And so Prabhupada used this unalloyed devotion, constant and unalloyed devotion to me. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that all these other 19 qualities of knowledge were useless without this particular quality. That everything else follows from that quality. And there's a wonderful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhavati Bhagavati Akinchana, and he says, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna Mano Ratena Sati Dhavato Bahi. One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is because he is hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. This verse, Prabhupada also quoted many times, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna, that these superior qualities of the demigods. And so it harks back also Arjuna's question of how is a person to be understood, be transcendental to the modes of material nature. And Krishna has already explained in chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita how this is, where Arjuna asks, Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? And how does he walk? It's a very interesting set of qualities that Arjuna asks about. How is he situated? Sthanam. Stita pragyasya kabashasa. Samadhi stasya keshava. Stita di kim prabhasete kimasita vrajete. And Krishna answers, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of sense desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So this whole idea, he gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification. He doesn't say he gives up sense gratification, because it's impossible to give up sense gratification. It is just that the sense gratification has to be directed in the proper direction, to the proper source. Rishikena Rishikesa. So Krishna says that, you know, it is my senses that are the source of happiness, that create this understanding of bhakti yoga. So this idea of the mind is also in this 14th chapter, and it shows particularly is Krishna's consistency throughout his philosophy and his understanding and his presentation of this philosophy. And we understand that this is coming to us through the medium of the spiritual master. It's coming through the line of disciplic succession, and one should therefore try to adopt and release that desire for sense gratification and direct one's desires toward service to the spiritual master, towards hearing and chanting of the holy names. This is the most important aspect, the most important practice of devotional service, is this understanding of the holy name, the importance of the holy name, that the holy name is non-different from Krishna himself, from Krishna as a personality. It's very interesting that we just generally think of spiritual sound vibration. So we don't think of sound vibration having a personality or being a person. So in Krishna book, we read about the hymns of the personified Vedas, that the Vedas actually are persons, and this holy name in the same way is a person. And we pray to the holy name to give us this understanding and to enlighten us. And that is how we become enlightened, by this chanting of the holy names. So we'll chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So are there any questions? There's some interesting philosophical points in this, in Krishna's exposition of the idea of that everything is simply under the control of the three modes of material nature, and how free will would operate operates in this understanding. So, yes. Wait, there's a microphone. Well, but first, already.
Okay. I was just wondering, I've heard this chapter, and you've discussed this many times, but I always forget this knowledge, and I'm always under the modes, even though I know, but then I forget. Then I hear again, oh, there are the modes, and everything is under the modes. Then again, I forget.
Yes.
So, should I be doing something?
It's the veil. It's described that Maya, the material energy, is like a veil, a covering veil. And so we forget. That is natural tendency. But by constant practice, then that forgetfulness, you know, sarvasya chaham hridhi sannivishto, you know, that Krishna says that apohanam cha, that I am the source of knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So there's always that kind of side to it, that there is, just like in the spiritual world, we understand that there is also a veil, and that's the veil of yoga maya that covers the inhabitants of Gokul into thinking that Krishna is this little boy, and he's a very beautiful little boy, and we like him a lot, and if anything should happen to him, we would be very, you know, this is a totally different idea, that Krishna is Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman, you know, all within one. So that forgetfulness, in a way we can embrace it, that it gives us the idea that things can be ever fresh in that way, because we're conditioned to be part of that veil of forgetfulness. Yes, go on.
I thought that was very interesting. You were talking about how in the discussion that you see people around you all the time that appear to have very good qualities. You know, they're in the material world, you're running into them, they seem very personable and doing so many good things or whatever, and then you can lose sight living in the association of devotees sometimes, seeing devotees not treat other devotees very nicely, and then you can think, oh, well, these people out there, they have good qualities, and I'm not so sure about the bhakta next to me, you know? So I really like that being spoke tonight. Maybe you can enliven us a little bit more myself, how to take that and apply it in our life a little better.
Yes, it is. It is very... we can... I don't know that we should embrace the idea that Lord Chaitanya's movement is for the most fallen and therefore we shouldn't expect anything from our devotees, but... well... That is a conundrum of how the material works, the world works. That somehow devotees have received this spark that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Prabhupada is the founder Acharya, and he is the spiritual master and teacher. And if I can just somehow be part of that, you know, then this will be my success in life. And so when we look at all the devotees, you know, we can take that to heart, that even though some devotees may just exhibit harshness or like that, we say, well, you know. But on the other hand, the idea that what we would call the people out there have all good qualities... There, some people we understand are in the mode of goodness. Some people are in the mode of passion. Some people in the mode of ignorance. And so one sees that those people who are motivated by the mode of goodness, they do good things. I'm always reminded of, although it's, and you can see it in the qualities of Varnashram Dharma, that, for example, you have entrepreneurs, and they have this idea that I will give 50% of whatever I've earned to charity. There's somewhat of a movement by some of the most wealthy entrepreneurs in the world that they will give 50% of their wealth, whatever they accomplish, to good causes, whether it's medical or feeding people or whatever. So this is a mode of goodness quality for the Vaishya class. The Vaishyas are supposed to give in charity. That's what they do. That's how they attain the mode of goodness. And one sees, if one looks at the Varnashram situation, the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that whatever benefits the particular Varna gets from their situation, like we understand the Vaishyas, they attain wealth. So their obligation is to give in charity. So similarly, with the Kshatriyas, they have power, and the obligations of that power are that they should protect people. So you see the policemen, the motto on the police cars, to protect and to serve. Although many people don't appreciate, but that is actually what they're supposed to do. That's the obligation that they have. And so similarly for the Brahmanas, their little cross, the cross they have to bear, is that the Brahmanas are supposed to be austere. They're supposed to live in lives of austerity. And that's not so easy. So, and the Shudras, well, I guess they just enjoy, I don't know. You have to work very hard, and though you work very hard, but you get to enjoy whatever fruits that's there. We understand, because they don't have a complete worldview. That's the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is explaining to Arjuna. You have this kula dharma that you have. It's not a total worldview. It's not complete, and unless you become complete, you cannot become perfect. So, just like you mentioned Bill Gates, there was another one, Ted Turner. So he was the first entrepreneur who decided he was going to give $1 billion in charity. That was his. So he was going to be the number one entrepreneur in the world, because not only he was going to give it, but he could afford to give it. So therefore, that gave him distinction. See. And that is a good for an entrepreneur. That is a good distinction that you gave. Of course, and he gave it, I believe, to UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund. So presumably it's helping children. So that was his. But one of the things that he also does is he buys huge tracts of land in the prairies, in places like Montana and Dakota and places like that, in order to raise buffaloes, because the buffaloes were becoming extinct. And he thought that, well, I'll protect buffaloes. Now, if he'd had a Krishna conscious worldview, he'd have done something to protect cows, but he kind of missed the point, in that. So that was the incompleteness of his, it may be good to, the buffaloes got to live also, so why not? But that is the incompleteness of a worldview that doesn't include Krishna consciousness. So we have to look at that, and we understand for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. That is the law of karma. And so whatever benefits these entrepreneurs will give, there will also be some drawback. And that is the way of the world. That is what this material world. The three modes are always competing. That was another point in this chapter, was that the three modes are always competing: goodness, passion, and ignorance. At one point, goodness will be dominant. At another, passion will be dominant. And another, ignorance will be dominant. And we know that this being Kali Yuga, usually it's passion and ignorance that are dominant. One doesn't really see, you know, too many enlightened Brahmins, you know, being able to be a force in this world. Very rarely. So, anyway, we're very fortunate to have come to Krishna consciousness and to be part of a society that actively promotes this worldview and this understanding of the Supreme, the understanding of how the material world works. And because we have a consistent worldview, because we have this understanding, we're able to accept what is happening in the spiritual world as explained to us by Srila Prabhupada in his books. If this material world, if they're right about the material world, they must be right about the spiritual world too. So we'll take it on faith that in the spiritual world, everything is Satchit Ananda and Vigraha, that we will have form and we will have this constant devotional service to Krishna. So, are there any other...
Over here.
Yes.
Just a statement and then a question. And you kind of already answered the question, but I want to hear more. You brought up free will, which yes. We like to throw around no matter what particular circle you're in. I just thought it might be interesting to let you know, you may already know this, is in the Reformation, the gentleman by the name of Erasmus of Rotterdam wrote a pamphlet called The Freedom of the Will, and he was responded by a book, and the book was written by Martin Luther, and Luther responded by writing in a book, The Bondage of the Will. Uh-huh. And if you ever get a chance, that's supposed to be his most best work. Uh-huh. And but I want to ask you regarding the three modes. First, I want to say I hate all three of them. And sometimes, and you were mentioning it, is it seems, are we more or less as human beings, as living entities, are we on a roulette table in which we as the white ball are thrown in, and do we land in the goodness, the passion, or the ignorance? Is it that way, or does somebody remain in one of those three areas for the rest of their lives?
Everything is born out of desire. That is also the key understanding behind the modes of material nature. That because Krishna has desires, because Krishna has wishes, longings, hankerings, in the way that he exhibits them. So similarly, we are a small part and parcel of that, and so we have certain desires, and so. It is the distortion of these desires in the material world that results from the modes of material nature. That is the way in which we see the problem of the material world. Now, if we align our desires with the desires of Krishna, then actually we make advancement. And by doing that, we align with... for example, the desire of Srila Prabhupada that he wanted everybody to be saved, everybody to be become liberated in this world, to create, the re-spiritualization of human society. This is a very bold, idea, but, you know, Prabhupada always had this idea that we shoot the rhinoceros, shoot for the rhinoceros, so... Because if you succeed, then it is a great success. And if you fail, they'll say, well, you know, it was impossible anyway. You know. So that's a nice reflection on the mood of Srila Prabhupada. And thank you. So, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.